Good day, everyone. I am your host for The Medium's Porch. My name is Kathleen Bolt. On The Medium's Porch, we bring to you the process, the privilege, and the power of communicating with the spirit world. This podcast is part of Blog Talk Radio, Lilydale Radio, and it is part of the Lilydale Assembly, Inc. Facebook page, and you'll also find it on my website. But you're here now, so I want to introduce you to the most wonderful medium. She is my mentor. She is a beautiful soul. Eileen Davies, welcome for being with us today.
Hello, Kathleen. Extremely happy to be here.
I'm grateful for you being able to take the time out to do this. Eileen is one of the most well-respected mediums in the UK and abroad. She has been practicing mediumship from a very young age and has had the privilege of meeting some very influential mediums such as Gordon Higginson, Eric and Heather Hatton, Glenn Edwards. These are mediums that have influenced her work, and she's come into her own, and she is now influencing thousands of students along the way as she comes from her heart and models what mediumship is meant to be. She's a highly spiritual individual. She is very much on a spiritual path through mediumship. And that's another reason I wanted to bring her to you today, because it's really great to understand how mediumship is more than just a practice or a profession. It is a personal path of growth and development. Eileen has been influenced by many, Eastern teachers such as Muji. And she has become, like I said, a role model, a mentor, a teacher, a mentor for many throughout the world. She is a mother. She is a grandmother. She is a wife. She is a daughter. She is a beautiful soul. Eileen, again, welcome and thank you for coming and joining us today.
Thank you.
So what I want to do is I want to first start, usually at the beginning of these, Eileen, what I like to do is ask the question, a particular question that gets us rolling. But I want to tell the audience first, before we really get into the thick of it, I wanted to tell them about this beautiful book that you've authored. And this book is stunning. It talks about the very thing I mentioned earlier, where I want to allow people to understand the personal path and the ability that mediumship has to progress us as spirits in the physical form. So mediumship here, touching the stars, tell us a little bit about, oh, you can see I have all my tabs in here. I didn't take them out. tell us a little bit about your book. What inspired you? What got it started? What was your goal? Anything you want to share?
Okay, so what inspired me is that my whole mediumistic journey, I've always tried to understand the nature of mediumship. It isn't enough just to relay a communication from the spirit world. I think it's really vital that we look at how, as a sensitive, as a medium, you respond to the power and the presence of the spirit. So it's taken me on a journey of exploration, not just where mediumistic communication is concerned, but learning about my own self as a physical and spiritual being.
Right. And so you put it in a book so we'd have a sense of how to do that. And I know this book inside and out now with all my tabs and such. For those of you interested in learning more about this book, you can purchase it on Eileen's website. Eileen, would you give us the name of your website so people can go and find this, please?
www.eileendavies.com.
Excellent. And the contents, just to give you an idea of what you'll be able to cover here, is the meditative mind. This is something I know you have done much meditation over the years, Eileen, yourself. So who are some of the people that influenced you over the years in that department?
Lots of people, and essentially, you know, not just those who have been teaching mediums, people who have been from the Sufi tradition, from the Buddhist tradition. You know, I think it's really, really important on your own search and journey that you explore as much as you can. It's a process of self-discovery. What works for you?
Right. So that is moving into then after that, you can find your way to the next chapter where we're looking at the infinite self. And this is, I have to say, Eileen, this is one of my favorite parts of the book. It goes very much in depth into the spirit world, your understanding of it, and your experience with it. And then we talk further about the nature of communication, practical suggestions, and also you talk about the trance states. I love this book. Anyone interested in learning more about their own mediumship would definitely benefit from picking up this book. So tell us now, Eileen, what is it that pulls you back to mediumship again and again? Now, you've pretty much maybe said some of that when you talked about the book, but tell us a little more about that. Explore that.
That's a really interesting question when you say pulls me back, because in a sense, when I discovered mediumistic communication, I've never left it. You know, I know some people go through a process, it becomes a very central point of their life, and then everyday life takes over. So I have been immersed in mediumship, in spiritualism, my whole life, basically. So it wasn't something that I ever had to feel a call to be pulled back to. But I believe that's what happens when you're touched by the unseen world. Because I believe that when you touch the essence of life itself and you have this realization that life is eternal, what happens is then that you change. You can't be the person that you were before, because everything about your awareness, your perception, your sensitivity begins to become heightened and life has a whole new meaning.
And would you say the goal of a spiritual development is to be able to touch the real self? I know that word is put out there, like, who is the real self? Where is the real self?
That's an extremely lovely question. You know, there is nowhere to the real self, so to speak. Okay. If I say to you, you know, where is the spirit? Everybody, of course, would point within, because we identify the self, the spirit, as being inside ourselves. But I think, you know, to use the concept that we're all like little droplets in a vast ocean of consciousness, a vast ocean of awareness. What is the real self? The real self is that within you which is eternal and timeless, that which will never change and will never die. So there's lots of concepts that we are never really born and we never really die. If you look at the Bhagavad Gita, which if you look at the translation of the Bhagavad Gita, what it means, it's the song of God. And there's a beautiful passage in there that says, the real you, water cannot wet, wind cannot dry, fire cannot burn. The real you is ancient, unborn and eternal. And birth and death are just a parenthesis in the eternal continuum. So it's saying we were never born and we never die. We associate the self as being sort of located here, but the self is non-linear and non-local. So we can't really do that, but the mind and our conditioning likes us to put labels on everything. But we are part of the divine mystery that we call life and existence.
So would you say when we use the terminology inner self or tuning in, we're tuning in to what you're sounding like you're telling me, if I get this right, you're saying it's everywhere at once. It's in that consciousness. But we need to do that in order to focus in on that by using the context of the physical body. Am I understanding that?
Yes, absolutely. To a degree. You see, we're so schooled and conditioned. It's about remembering who we really are, remembering our true nature, which, as I said a moment ago, is divine and eternal, timeless. And it's removing all the conditioning until we tap into that sense of what self is. So if you look at what consciousness is, it's pure awareness, unmodified by any mental conditioning. And so we have to remove all the labels and all the stuff that's got in the way of us understanding our real self. I mean, when you look at mediumship, a lot of people want to, you know, go on a fast track in one end of a course and out the other and ching, they're a medium. And it really doesn't happen like that, because it's a never-ending process that we experience. And we have to become conscious of understanding, first of all, ourselves. How can we perceive other realities unless we first understand our own self? and the world around us.
I've always found the seeking process, and not that I actually go about seeking it with that in mind, but I've been drawn to meditation and you know, studying different religions and things like that. And I've had spiritual experiences, what I would call a spiritual experience, but I find them so elusive. And can you talk a little bit about how the as we go on this path, this unfolding or revealing, actually, right? The revealing of what's already there. Why is it's so tough at the beginning to hold on to that experience? And is there a way that we, as we progress, that you've experienced where that elusiveness disappears?
I think the secret really is learning the art of really being present. And when we're present to ourselves, it gives us a greater capacity to love more fully, to understand more completely. And we're not sort of caught up in all the big stuff that's somewhat unobtainable. So if we work at this moment, this given moment, bringing our best self to whatever we're encountering. And when we meet someone, you know, it's about looking at them through the eyes of loving awareness and not at somebody's reactions, not at somebody's anger, but looking beyond. You know, everybody has a history. Everybody has experienced suffering in their life and trauma at some point, I'm sure. But I think we have to look at where we unite together as one. And so when we break down any spiritual pathway or understanding to just being fully alive and present and aware in each given moment, it brings about a transformation in our own being. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to mess up sometimes. It doesn't mean that there'll be times then, you know, we can let ourselves down, but I think we can't really ever let ourselves down. We just have to be aware that everything starts with where we are. And we have to have loving kindness, self-acceptance regarding our own selves, understanding, and then it becomes easier to have loving acceptance, understanding for everybody else we meet. I think there's a lot out there that has this sense of, you know, it's a little bit misleading, I think, people. What is spirituality? A lot of people say, oh, I'm very spiritual. And I, bless their hearts, always laugh a little bit at that to myself, because we shouldn't need to label spirituality. If we have to say we're spiritual, there's something in the voicing of it that diminishes it. It should be in our conduct. It should be in the statement of who we are. We should become a living testimony to what we believe inside or what we know inside. And that shouldn't have to be said with any given title, any words, but just by our beingness, just by our presence and our love.
Beautiful. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's the ego that kind of runs away with itself sometimes, right?
I think so. And I remember many reading one of Wayne Dyer's books when he said ego represents edging God out, and that always stuck with me. I thought that was a very powerful saying, because you know, we always have a choice in life, and how any given moment we've got a choice how we react and respond and the kind of thoughts we think. And you know, when we replace fear for love, then it diminishes the power of the ego. And I think that the ego's greatest disappointment is that you should align yourself with your inner being, your spirit, because the core essence of your inner being realizes that you are love and we are all one. So when you come from that perspective, it really is the death of the egoic self. But that can't happen overnight. It's a sort of a working towards, but we can't sort of move beyond the egoic self if we're constantly caught up in that cycle of, oh, I want to diminish the ego, or I want to overcome the ego. It doesn't happen like that, because every time we say the word ego, we're letting it in a little bit. So it can only be overcome by love, by just holding on and being in the presence of love. And that's really fine, isn't it, when we're having a conversation about it here. Or it's really lovely when we're at a seminar or somewhere beautiful and we're with people of like minds. But the challenge is in the everyday living of life, when we're alongside people who aren't on the same vibration as you, that don't have the same understanding. And that those times, we're surely being called upon to be more present in the power of loving awareness.
That's when it really is the test for ourselves, right? When we're in that situations. And I know that I had an experience last summer where I found myself just falling into that moment where someone was upset and I was unfettered by it. And I just felt love for that person. And I was like, yeah, this is it. And that's why I say, is this, I asked the question about, you know, elusiveness. It's like, how do we keep this consistent for ourselves? And clearly we're the ones that separate ourselves, right? When we, like you said, the ego, and if I'm hearing you right, the ego and the loving awareness, they don't really share the same place. It's loving awareness. That's what is, right? Yeah. I understand.
Absolutely. And if you practice just reminding yourself, you know, there are a lot of the monastic traditions that are called to prayer. And it doesn't mean the sounding of a bell and they make a journey. But in that state of being called to prayer, their awareness is moved by the reminder of being in a state of grace, of prayer. And we can all do that in our everyday lives. You know, you can do it every hour, on the hour. You can do it every 5 minutes, you know, and it's not a great effort. You just have to move your attention to, you know, where is my awareness now? Am I in a place of loving awareness, or am I filled with fear, anxiety, worry, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow? What's going to happen to somebody in my family? Because we're only created to deal with what's happening right now. And the universe responds to our present moment energy. And that's really, really important. So the energy that we give out at any given moment is creating what we will encounter or experience to a degree. So that's why love is always the answer.
Right. Because love begets love.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So spirit intelligence is quite aware of that. And when they come through and work through us, what I love about mediumship is, as a medium, you let go of having to be in control of the outcome, which is one of my favorite things about mediumship, is I don't feel like I have to control anything. And I can open up to that flow of that loving awareness and that love that comes through. And I find myself very often getting very caught up in just the, I call it magic. It's not magic in the traditional ritual sense, but I get caught up in that wonder and just the fascination of the intelligence that spirit brings, and how you can see when you stand back how they knit all these moments together. Do you have specific stories and experiences through your journey that would exemplify the intelligence of spirit and its connection with that loving awareness?
I think, oh my goodness, that there are so many.
Weird, yeah.
I mean, it's hard to sometimes define or pinpoint. I mean, I remember doing a demonstration some years ago, and it was a lovely demonstration. There was a good amount of people there, and the spirit world communicated with, I think it was four mothers. They didn't know one another. They were sitting next to each other, and there were so many shared commonalities within the communication. It was mind-blowing, but I felt essentially it was sort of being woven together in some way. So the lady who had most recently lost her son to the spirit world, and it had been very fresh and very recent, within like three weeks or something like that, what she experienced by listening to the people that received the communication prepared her emotionally and mentally to receive a communication, because it was her first time in a meeting such as that. But I had this sort of image of the spirit world, those communicators all getting together, all those sons saying, what can I say that you can share that is a, it is a common, it was something common that will touch each person here. So for mothers, even the fact that they were sitting one next to one another was incredible. But I felt the skillfulness from the spirit communicators to reach them all was just like mind-blowing. And so I did start thinking, had they all met over there? Had they all had a discussion? You know, it was just, it was mind-blowing. It took my breath away, I have to say that. Because, you know, when they communicate, we will never, ever know just how much effort they make to share a few thoughts, a few memories through you, the channel, so that their loved ones can really have the proof and the healing balm that a true communication brings. So yeah, it's mind-blowing. I always remember the time a lady came to me for a sitting, and her husband was in the spirit world, and he clearly showed me, he obviously established, you know, his presence, given enough information, but he clearly showed me a heart of crocuses with an outer circle around it. And as soon as I said that, she dismissed it. It didn't make any sense to her. And the only thing that came out in the just a few moments before was how much her husband had liked gardening, and he'd passed with cancer. And towards the end of his life, even though he was very frail, he still insisted on going out to the garden. And so the garden became a source of resentment for her. But it happened that months and months after this sitting in the spring, she phoned me and she said, oh, you may remember me. And I didn't to start. And then it came back to me a little bit. And then she said, the crocuses, the yellow crocuses with a purple circle of crocuses around it, she said didn't mean anything. She hadn't been out in the garden. She hadn't even cleared the leaves from winter. And she got a gardener in. And when he cleared away the leaves, there was this circle, purple circle. And in the center was the heart of golden crocuses. And so he'd left a testimony of his love that will be present and a reminder year after year after year. And it transformed her in some way because it was a visible, tangible sight. I don't know if that quite comes under the intelligence of the spirit world. I think it's probably the intelligence of the husband here, but it was transferred obviously in a communication, and that made it that little bit more special.
Yeah, he definitely had thought ahead, but for you to be able to bring it before it even happened really was evidence for her. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fascinating what is evidence, isn't it? It's always something personal, of course, to the person who receives it, to the recipient. And it isn't necessarily always the great things. People always want the parting of the Red Sea, so to speak, but life is made up of moments. And when the spirit communicators lovingly share a memory, a cherished moment, you know, that's what makes it real. I think when you touch emotion in a communication from a loved one, it makes it more real, you know, because mediumship essentially comes into two categories. You've got factual mediumship with obviously all the, you know, the key evidential points that most people would hope in some part of the communication they would transfer. But to make it real to the person that receives it, I think it's really, really vital that you touch something of emotional relevance and emotional significance. And that's what really gives it meaning. And that can be the slightest thing.
You know, in Britain, there are a lot of mediums that emphasize the evidence, and in the US, there's a lot of mediums that do the opposite, less emphasis on the hard factual evidence and more on the advisory capacity or the pseudo, it shouldn't be counseling because we're not legal to do that, but the messages, right? What I've learned from working with you and other of my mentors in the past is that, like you said, that if you're touching the emotion of the person, you're bringing in a storyline, you're bringing in something that pulls in all of that. It's not like you're looking for one or the other. You're being present for the spirit. Am I understanding this as something that you applaud in mediumship?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's what gives life to the communication, is when you touch on something of emotional relevance. Absolutely. It's so, so valid. But I think a good, healthy communication should be a combination of both. And I think the advisory part, you know, so many people are looking to the spirit communicators to provide all the answers to their questions. And I don't think personally that's what they're here to do when they say, that's my own honest opinion. I think, well, we should grow up and be responsible for making our own choices. Because it's very interesting. I've had people come back and said, oh, you said this and that. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I would never say that in a communication or relay in a communication from the spirit. And a lot of the time, people hear what they want to hear. They don't always hear what's actually being said anyway. So I think you have to be very careful. And yet, having said that, there's no doubt that prophecy has been a part of mediumistic experience. We can't deny that. If we look at the history of spiritualism, it's full of mediums. When they were immersed in the power, they prophesied. And therein lies a difference. It's when you get people who haven't been trained properly, they don't understand what the power is, and they say things, and you know, then they can be liable, because if they make a prediction it doesn't come true, oh, you know, it can be endless difficulties. So I think we have to be very careful that, first of all, the spirit communicator has been established, and they've proven that they're who they say they are. And then all the other elements that make a good, strong communication have been fulfilled. Then if they say something which brings forward a little bit of insight, then that's okay.
Because it's coming right from spirit. It's coming.
Absolutely, because totally, the spirit communicator is the source. And that's been proven, because by everything that's gone before, yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, there's times when we all want a little bit of help and advice, of course. But I think what we need to do is train people to move within and to reach out to their own spirit helpers, loved ones, and receive their own insight. I think that would be a really, really, I think that's the stage we should be at now, is teaching everybody that they can communicate.
Right.
It's just for those who some people call, you know, label themselves as special. It's inherent in us all, because we're all spiritual beings. Before we chose to be born upon the earth and showed up here in this physical form, we were spirit. We were in the spirit realities, and we would have been expressing ourselves through our spiritual awareness then, and our spirit body. So yeah, I think it's within the capacity of all. Some people aren't interested, that's fine, it's not their journey. But you know, most people, when they lose someone they love, terrible expression that is, they lose someone you love. You can never lose them. It's just a and it's saying that, isn't it? But I feel it's so important that there's an element of teaching everybody just to be still and to become aware, first of all, of their own inner self, and then what awareness and sensitivity really means, and then they can touch those in the unseen world and be conscious of their presence.
And that process that you speak of, again, I'm pulling it back to simple terms, you know, meditation or sitting in the power. The specification of those two, I feel the experience, I feel when I think of them in those terms, I find them very different from each other. So when you speak of getting into your presence, do you suggest that people that have never done this before start with something like mindfulness? Or do we just go immediately into that idea and concept of sitting in the power and experience spirit right away?
I think that, yes, you have to go through the process of learning to still the everyday awareness, the mind, the busy monkey mind, as all the beautiful Buddhists always say, which is always chattering, always wanting to distract us. it's very interesting. It's like the mind plays a game with us, isn't it? The minute you physically sit at peace and you try and begin to focus, everything that you'd forgotten begins to suddenly rise up to the surface. It could be somebody said or did 15 years ago, which you thought you'd long forgotten. Suddenly it's looking at you, it's gazing at you. And I feel what's really happening there, it's the process of saying, look, you've got to deal with your stuff. You've got to deal with who you are and the things you've been holding on to, because a lot of people say, for instance, they've forgiven someone. And we can say it with our work, from a headspace, and we can say the right words. But forgiveness is goes much, much deeper. And of course, forgiveness frees. But I think it's one thing saying the words, it's another actually feeling it. And I think, therein lies something, or there's something I have to work on. There's another thing I have to work on. So the mind will always try and work at distracting us, because again, the analytical mind, its connection with the egoic self and the intellect, and will always try and make sense of what does this mean. So to clear away all the debris of our thinking is a process. And I've met a lot of people over the years that said, oh, I just can't meditate. I've tried it, I can't do it. And I hear that time and time again. And I say, well, just you have to persevere. And I remember reading something not too long ago, and it was about somebody, traveling around India and visiting all the existing well-known spiritual gurus and teachers. And the person offered that question, I'm really finding it difficult to meditate. And he just smiled and he said, well, if you can manage 10 minutes, that's an achievement. He said a lot of people who say they're meditation masters can only manage 10 minutes, but they don't want to tell anybody that. And I thought that was very, very revealing. And it is interesting, because if you can manage, you've got to start off small. If you can manage 5 minutes, fabulous. And then you build up to 10 minutes and then 20 minutes. Because if you're honest, even within that space of 20 minutes, you'll find that there's a place where the mind begins to interfere. And that's that moment when you've just got to let it float by. The Buddhist analogy of the mind being like the blue cloudless sky, and then all of a sudden a thought is represented by a cloud that moves by. You don't fix or feed or give it any attention, you let it move by. So that's a process, that's beginning to quieten the mind. And so it's these little moments, and then you can practice concentration meditation. You've got all your lovely visualization meditations you can do. You've got metta, which is practicing the art of loving kindness. That for me is one of the most liberating practices that you can do, because it's really encouraging you to learn what love really is, and to realize that loving has to begin with your own self.
So,
Most of
I was just going to say, would you want to explain to the audience about Meta?
Metta is just really, it's a Sanskrit term, and it really just means it's the art of loving kindness. So within the meditative state, once you've gone through the first processes of quieting the mind, making sure the body's nice and comfortable, and you've let go of all the distractions, of learning just to be present in yourself and love yourself. If you've behaved in a way that is less than what you have hoped for, embrace that. It's part of you. Your mistakes, your failures, your joys, your sorrows, it all these things are transitory. They're all just states, or really like emotional guests that come and go. So to love yourself, then what arises from that is, who is the self? We're back to where we were a moment ago. It's just saying, yeah, it's okay. It's okay if I mess up. It's okay if I haven't always been the best version of myself that I'd like to be. But being comfortable with that, and realizing that it's okay to be imperfect. I think so many spiritual traditions, not that it's actually the spiritual tradition, it's what people have interpreted, think they've got to be perfect. Who can be perfect? But the spirit world once said in the trance states, which I thought was rather beautiful, You know, it's too great a burden to be perfect, and it is. We won't be here, will we? But we can perfect our love. We can perfect our love. And I think that makes it doable. You know, before we get annoyed with somebody or angry with somebody, remind yourself to look at why they're behaving like that. So loving kindness starts with oneself. That's the first part. You can try visualizing yourself, looking at yourself on the outside. You can practice looking at yourself sitting on a, maybe you take yourself into a room, you're sitting in a chair, and now you've moved, the real essence has moved outside yourself, and you're looking at yourself, and you give yourself a hug. You know, we live our life, we're on the inside looking out the world. We've never actually seen ourselves on the outside looking in. And it sort of creates, it dissolves these barriers. And we realize, well, we're just human, you know, doing the best we can with the tools of our experience. And so first step, then the second is sending, projecting loving kindness to those you know, your friends, your family, anybody that's touched your life. And seeing them in the light of wholeness, in this sort of image of just blissful radiance. And then by the time you've been working on that, you get to stage three, and that's sending loving kindness to those who have caused you suffering. Now, that's a big one. That's a really big one. To those who have caused you suffering. And that's when, what I said a moment ago, when I was speaking about forgiveness, is really important, because we can think on the head level that we've forgiven, but we haven't. So it's really learning this process of, you know, understanding yourself, your responses, but then at the same time as doing that, embracing the realization that everybody is human, everybody makes mistakes. And then lastly is sending loving kindness out to everybody, all humanity, all humankind. So it's very, very beautiful practice, but I feel it really helps you inwardly, spiritually. So that's metta. And then you've got concentration meditation, which is very beneficial to people who are learning the art of mediumship, because as a medium, you need to know how to concentrate properly. You can't hold your attention and your awareness on something for a few moments, it's going to be very difficult to give your full attention to your spirit communicator. So that's very, very important.
Right. So there's a lot of information when you open yourself like that coming to you. So you have to know how to shift focus in that process. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, you can work through all the different spiritual traditions, and they've all got slightly different perspective, but in a way, when you strip it all away, a lot of them are, their practices are very, very similar. And of course, you've got the beautiful Ajahn Chah, and you've got Suzuki Roshi, and all these people. Suzuki Roshi brought the mindfulness, as did Thich Nhat Hanh, beautiful Vietnamese monk. I'm sure everybody's probably heard or read some of his beautiful words of wisdom. And just again, back to totally being present. It's an accomplishment being present. But if we're developing our mediumship, that will require you to be present within the communication. But mediumship is a bit of a dichotomy, because in one part we're very present, but on the other part we lose ourselves to ourselves within the experience. So there's this beautiful sort of dance of energy and dance of almost contradiction in terms within that, really.
When we do trance, that is more of a letting go than, say, the mediumship would be. Am I understanding that?
I think it's different levels.
Okay. Oh, when
I first came into the movement, the word entrancement was used a lot. And when you see a medium really demonstrating their mediumship, they are lost to themselves. If they're too present and too self-aware, it will open the door to the mind. And that won't enable them to just to move with the flow of the communication. So entrancement, if I'm demonstrating, I'm lost to myself. And so that is a form, a very subtle form of entrancement. So when you're speaking about the trance states, which I know in the US you would use the word channeling more, that's more the tradition, you're allowing yourself just to surrender that bit more fully and completely. And of course, that's when the mind wants to come in, because to learn the art and skill of surrendering and, relinquish, allowing the mind to relinquish control isn't an easy place to be for a lot of people. Because we're all control freaks, basically.
Well, I love this makes perfect sense when you think about it in the big picture. You get present, you allow the revealing to come forward. Spirit comes and supports you, which, if I'm understanding, that's what sitting to power is all about, sitting presently, being present for everything, sitting in that loving kindness, letting spirit touch us and nourish us. And then you become a clear channel, or well, I use the word channel in this case. Case because you are a medium, you're the person in the middle of a flow of frequency. I love sitting in the power, I have to say. It made a huge difference when I was introduced to that in the early days by Colin Bates and Mavis Patillo. They introduced me to that process, and I did question it a lot about what we've just talked about, the difference between, because I'd been meditating, but I noticed that, like I had said, when I shifted that into that process of letting go, like going that extra step that I'm not doing something, I'm just present. It changed everything. And I know in meditation they talk about being present, but I don't think I ever understood it. I was always trying to be present for clearing my mind, clearing my mind, clearing my mind. And I felt sitting in the power made a huge difference. And I noticed the difference it made in my readings as well, in my communications.
Well, sitting in the power originated, of course, with Glyn Edwards. He was the first person, he was the first person, and he received the suggestion from another medium. And so Glyn sort of perfected the art and the practice of sitting in the power. And so then he became spirit-led with it. So sitting in the power is very different from a lot of the meditative practices. Because the intent is to merge in a state of oneness with all life, with all existence. And it begins by moving your awareness beyond your physical form, beyond the location that you're in, into the spaciousness around you, until you feel your conscious awareness is blending at one with all life, with all existence, with the earth. With the heavens, with the mountains, everything, and all people. And you feel a sense of losing yourself when you're sitting in the power. And I'm sure you can identify with that. I think my most favorite way of summing that up is with the little statement by, or as a little part of a poem by the Japanese poet Lipo, where he says, "We sit together, the mountain and I, until only the mountain remains." Now, that for me epitomizes what sitting in the power is, because there's a dissolving of self. There's this merging, he's becoming at one with the mountain until only the mountain remains. So he's lost to himself. And that for me really, really is what sitting in the power is like. Like you can sit for an hour, and where did that hour go? Because you've entered timelessness. You've lost this sort of sense of time and distance and space, and you've dissolved into, I suppose, this state of pure consciousness, really.
I feel like I've just drifted off into it, just thinking about it.
I have heard some people say, they've described sitting in the power, and it really is just another visualization. But you shouldn't be visualizing when you're sitting in the power. It's this sense of losing oneself and dissolving and merging with life, with existence. And there is no here or there. There is no spirit world and this material reality. All is one. And that becomes very, very evident when you really practice it. And it's like that moment before you fall asleep at night. A lot of people say, I'm sit in the pan. I sort of feel like I'm nodding off, but you're not really, because there's always this modicum of conscious awareness that's happening.
There's a term that's been used called transcendence. So what I'm referring to in my understanding of transcendence are the times when, say, someone's doing a guided meditation and you're in that place, in that before sleep space, right? But then I'll come back just before they invite me to come back. So the intelligence of some part of the space, the energy, the field, myself, whatever vocabulary we want to use there, knows it's time to come back. But when I come back, I have no recollection of quote unquote where I've been. Is that a transcendent state in your understanding, or what does the word transcendence mean to you?
It's transcending self, transcending the limitations that we encounter by expressing ourselves through this physical form, with all the limits and conditioning we experience. So it's moving beyond. So yeah, and when you access the part of you that is pure, the part of you that is just, pure being, pure consciousness, you find that you know things, you connect with things, because we're all part of this, universal web of life, if you want to use that expression. And that becomes very evident when you start working with your mediumistic powers, because you know things. Phone rings, you know who it's going to be, and there's that sense, because you're part of this whole, and you're no longer functioning as a single unit, but as a part of the whole, and your connection with that whole becomes amplified until it becomes more real than this reality, I think, probably. Well,
Yeah, because I never want to come back. I mean, when we have sitting in the power with you, there's so many times where I'm like, no, I want to stay there. And you come back feeling magnificent, and there are no words to describe it. It's that just sense of like you said, being with everything and nothing, no words will satisfy the experience of that. And there's a heal, I believe there's a healing that goes on during that time as well. So
oh, totally. I totally believe that. I think whatever the need within you, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, as you tap into, if you can call it source energy, I don't like that expression very much, but the essence maybe is better, then you do experience this sort of sense of divine wholeness and healing and come back feeling renewed and invigorated. Totally.
with so much pain and suffering going on in the world right now, well, always really, how do you suggest that we don't allow ourselves to be pulled into it? Because I know earlier you spoke of just checking in with ourselves. I'm going to use the word checking in, where we just stop and take a moment to say, where am I? And tune in to that deeper place that we're aware of within our being. Do you have anything you want to say about what's going on in the world, where we can find our place in it? I know as empaths, some people get really upset by seeing what's going on. Do you have any offerings for that?
Wow, it's a big one that, and something that I'm working on. I think it's really hard to, be in the world and to be aware of all the suffering that's out there. And of course, as you rightly said, the more you become attuned and more sensitive, the more you are impacted. But then we can only do what we can do in our given corner. Of course, we can never measure the power of loving thoughts sent out.
Right.
May seem a bit, sort of twee to say that when there's real suffering and there's people we know or maybe don't know, but we're aware of people in war-torn countries. What question we must ask ourselves, can I help? What can I do to help in whatever small way? And I think if everybody thinks like that, then it's like, drop by drop, the cup overflows. Joined and gathered together, our efforts then will make a difference. And I'm always reminded of the thought of, when we get 1% of the populace thinking in a certain way, it becomes a critical mass which affects the collective whole. And so there were experiments done, and I'm sure you've heard of them, many years ago, when they had groups of people meditating, sending love and peace to certain major cities in the US, and the crime rates all went down, the accidents all went down, and they've got the statistics for it. So was it coincidence? The moment they stopped, everything went back to normal. So what you're suggesting is it's not completely transforming the situation, it's not completely stopping it, but it's creating, it's giving sort of like a balm. Now, if you're coming from a perspective and you think, well, I've just been listening to the news and this is happening, it all feels a little bit insignificant what we're doing. But I think we have to try anyway. But we can't consume our lives in thinking what's not right with the world. We can only begin with ourselves and being the best we can and making a difference in our area. And then, if you think of any one person in their life, the amount of people that they will have an influence over, whether varying degrees, of course, throughout their journey, we've touched thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Even more or less, I don't know. How can you measure? But if you've influenced each person you've touched in a life-enriching way, in a loving way, that will impact them, and maybe they'll be somebody who will create their own ripples. So ultimately, yes, you have to look at what can I change? Can I change anything? If you can, work with it. If not, the best to do is just sit and send loving thoughts out. We can't ever measure the impact of loving positive thoughts, because it's like many things. We can't weigh it, we can't measure it, we can't quantify it. So who knows?
That song in spiritualism we sing a lot, peace begins with me, let there be peace on earth. And then that line that says, we sing that says, peace begins with me. I think sometimes we forget the creative power that we have to make that so within ourselves.
Absolutely.
Is there anything you want to share with our listeners regarding your experiences personally, your maybe even your challenges or struggles? I know you mentioned this is a constant revealing, this is a lifelong path. Maybe even what are some of the things you're personally working on in your development or your mediumship?
I think that, for me, spiritual development and mediumistic development are entwined by invisible threads. I can't separate one from the other, because then that doesn't mean I'm going around all the time connected and wired to the spirit world and giving messages. I don't mean that. But bringing a sense of awareness to anything. There's a beautiful saying from Brother Lawrence from the Benedictine tradition, and it's just such a cute little story, because all he wanted to do was devote his time in prayer to God, and he was always confined to the chores in the kitchen. And so one day he found himself getting really upset that he couldn't spend time, as much time in prayer, in this state of grace, but he was assigned to peeling the potatoes and chopping the onions. And then he had this complete epiphany, and he realized that everything that you do, you must do it with love, and you must do it as a sense of service. And so he said, it's so sweet, this day I turn my omelet in the pan, and it will taste like no other omelet, because I will do it for God, and I will do it with love. And that's such a beautiful, it's just such a beautiful little story, because it shows us, no matter what we're doing, even though it's a mundane chore, it's a level of our mind, the level of our awareness that we bring to it can transform anything from the mundane to the divine. And I think that's the task that we all need to do. I try and that. Many times I don't succeed, of course. I don't. I get caught up the same as anybody else in the everyday living of life. But then I have a little reminder, and I do a little check. And I think when you work out your inner life, I believe that really helps your mediumship. I mean, some people maybe wouldn't say that. I think that It definitely does. And I think if I look back, the most remarkable mediums, excuse me, have been those who have had this spiritual presence that walk their talk, that, you know, their lives have been an embodiment to what they believe. And I think that's real mediumship. I am concerned at the moment because I think we're in danger that mediumship is, excuse me, becoming commercialized. It's becoming a commodity, a product, rather than this sort of sense of this is something very sacred that we're entering into. And we can't ever get caught up in the end result where our mediumship is concerned and communications. We can't become attached to the outcome, because if we become attached to the outcome, we'll invite the egoic self to always look in and always make a judgment. And we've got to be the best channel we can and then let it go. Give it to God. Let it go. If we think, oh, was that good enough? Was it this, as that? It's allowing the egoic self to start having a chat with us, and it would tell us all sorts of bizarre stories. So I think working on all aspects of, you know, personal growth, so important for me. And I think then that will reflect in your ability just to move your awareness and be conscious of other worlds.
Thank you so much. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, mediumship is natural. You see, it shouldn't be a chore. We shouldn't have to sweat and try and force it. And for me personally, I think there are lots of different ways people teach. And I, you know, I've been in the company and listened to a great many people over the years. And I think the greatest detriment, and I know there will be people that will disagree, and that's actually fine, because we're all entitled to have our different opinions, is, you know, when people are taught to ask the spirit, get this and get that and ask them that. And that's what I call probing mediumship. But when you're doing that, one, you're allowing yourself to enter into your mind. And a medium should just purely be the channel for the spirit communicator to tell their story. To tell their story, because they must have, and that was proven to me in that communication where all the sons from the mothers had collaborated in some way. So what I learned is that the spirit communicators have a concept of what they need to share. And so when you, a medium, thinks, oh, I want to know this, can you tell me that? We are taking away their right to tell their story, and it clutters the mind. So that's my experience. And I think who am I to tell the spirit communicator what they should be giving, what they should be saying? Surely they know better the needs of their loved one. And so it's about handing over and surrendering and letting go. And I think that is so, so important in the development of good mediumship. And we need that now more than ever. And we need to keep that which is sacred and divine within it as well. If we lose that, we've lost so much. The wonderful Estelle Roberts and her spirit influence Red Cloud and the trance states at one of their lovely circles. He said that those in spirit world prepare what they're going to say. They prepare it. And that fits in with my thoughts that they already must have a concept. So they must go through a sense of, well, if I share this, that will make sense in this way and that way also. So there's going to maybe be two meanings. I think they're very, very clever and intelligent in just what they choose to give and relay. Now, can you imagine communicating your innermost feelings and thoughts through somebody you've never met?
Oh, wow, yeah.
And that's the task they have when they communicate. And of course, there are then those we never hear from, and we never will till we meet up and we join with them again. And that's a fascinating thought as well. But in reality, because they're not in a linear time frame, in their reality, we're all going to be reunited in the blink of an eye anyway. So it doesn't matter the same. It matters to them in as much they want to take away the burden of grief and bring in the soothing balm of comfort.
And even though spirit works really vigorously and lovingly to bring that burden of grief away from us, we as mediums, we still are people, right? So when we have grief, we need to honor that, right? We need to address that, but that doesn't mean we have to get lost in feeling there's no hope. And that's where mediumship comes in, I feel.
Absolutely. It brings a soothing balm of hope. Absolutely. Yeah. Sweet nectar of comfort.
Yeah. I just love watching the transformation on people's faces, you know, especially when the occasion comes when you're giving a message and they're not making the full connection. And then, you know, they come back to you later and they're like, oh, it's Harvey. I know who it is, you know, like they make the connection after the fact. It's so lovely to see that transformation.
It's true. I mean, it's very hard, you know, when you're receiving a communication to think of everybody you've ever known and the people that sit on the fringe of your family, so to speak. It's very hard to instantly recall, you know, them all. But I think then the greatest proof comes in the nose anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it also proves in a very powerful way that medium isn't telepathically reading the mind of the person in front, which I think is a necessary component of a message.
Yeah. Yeah, we do a lot of, they call it going direct. And then that to those in Lilydale here, that is going to your sitter. That is going direct to your sitter and saying, may I come to you? And then bringing a message. And the indirect is considered going to spirit first, bringing the evidence, and then figuring out where it belongs or to whom it belongs. When it's been done like that, I'm always blown away by the intelligence, because I'll be getting the information. I'm not even looking in the audience, right? And then nobody's putting up their hand or claiming this person. Then finally it's like, spirit, where am I going? And then I'll just go to somebody and it's that person. And there's like 200 people in the space, right? So the intelligence and trusting is just remarkable when they come through and bring that.
It is incredible. And I think that in the process of relaying a communication, people very often take it for face value and they don't look deeper. I'm of the belief that it's got layers and layers of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like it's like the branch of a tree, one links to another and it goes off into another. And it's fascinating.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if sitters aren't able to get as much out of it, at least initially, because of the sophistication of what spirit is bringing through. But I also, having said that, I also trust that when the sitter is there, the sitter is on some other than conscious level, getting everything they need from that communication, not to mention the healing that's coming by the presence of that spirit, amplifying their energy in the room while I'm giving that message. So the spirit's bringing them that healing. But it's a fascinating process. I just love watching it unfold.
It is fascinating, absolutely. Yeah, and I think there's an energy contained beyond the words that's got a residual sort of healing element to it as well. And I think it isn't just what's said. Sometimes it's what's unsaid, and this sort of subtleness that people just go away feeling better. And it's a combination of their vibration and loving energy, which is transferred via the medium, and also the comfort through what's actually said that brings evidence, definitely.
Mediumship isn't such a somber experience, I've discovered. Do you find you get a lot of humor from the spirit loved ones that come through to communicate? Oh,
absolutely. I think essentially they want to take away the solemnity associated with death and dying, and replace the feeling of solemnity with a little bit of brevity and, you know, just transforming the energy. Yeah, well, very much so.
Well, this has been fabulous. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm very grateful for you being here, Eileen.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, are you taking on any more students in your online trainings at all that you want to invite people to check out your services?
Absolutely. I've always got, 6 week blocks that once a fortnight. So this next session's pretty much full, but there will be other availability throughout the year.
Okay, so EileenDavies.com, and remember to pick up her book, her Tome of Delight, and Spiritual Wisdom, as well as some information about mediumship and what you can do to improve and to reveal your mediumship to yourself. Eileen also has a wonderful pack of cards that can help you in that process, a tool to use in your development, or unfolding, revealing. So you can check that out online. They're beautiful. They're very clean and very lovely, very inspiring. Check those out. And if you have any questions, we can drop you a note at your website, correct, Eileen?
Absolutely wonderful.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So I want to thank everyone for joining us today. That's all the time we have for today. This podcast, The Medium's Porch, is hosted by Lilydale Assembly, as I had said at the beginning. So if you want to check out more about Lilydale and their courses, please go to www.lilydaleassembly.org. We do have a season in the summertime that we invite you to come out to, where we have on-site classes, we have activities where we do mediumship demonstrations outside, and we have other free conversations and activities you can do on the grounds. So do join us next summer if you can make it out here. And as for that, I'll leave you with it today. Please enjoy your day. Practice being present and in loving kindness. And we'll see you again in a few weeks. Thank you all. Be well.